This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Ganesan. Tonight, a deep dive into cryptocurrency.
First, we look into a suggestion from the Dewan Rakyat earlier this week that digital currencies should be adopted as legal tender here in Malaysia. Then, warnings from the EU about the instability and potential risks associated with cryptocurrencies.
All of which to say, we'd like to hear from you. Would you like to see cryptocurrencies used as legal tender? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at PFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08, so the thing, basically, that prompted this entire Insight story is the fact that the Ministry of Communications and Multimedia has proposed for cryptocurrency to be adopted as legal tender and also for NFTs and crypto mining activities to be legalized. This was something that came up by way of Datuk Zahidi Zainul Abidin, the Deputy Minister of the Communications and Multimedia Ministry, who said that the ministry is going to look into ways to increase the youth's involvement in digital assets.
So this was actually in response to a question from Ledang MP Syed Ibrahim Syed Noh. And it was on, it started off as a question on the government's stand on NFT platforms, which are more popular among the younger people in Malaysia. However, it did expand into a conversation about the value of cryptocurrency overall. Now, cryptocurrency, of course, is decentralized digital money that's based on blockchain technology and secured by cryptography. And this essentially refers to a digital ledger where the access is distributed among authorized users. So essentially, the transactions that are made can be recorded in relation to assets, including money, houses, or even intellectual property. And the thing that is used to put this forward as a viable mechanism is that any information that's being shared between authorized users is transparent, it's immediate, and cannot be tampered with even by an administrator.
So it's often been put forward, right, as an alternative to centralized money, basically, to the traditional notions of centralized money that most of us will be familiar with. However, at the moment, because it's not tied in the way that, for example, the ringgit is tied to Bank Negara, for instance, there's no authority that's going to regulate it, that can be held responsible for supervising its rise and fall, for all the various measures of security that we're talking about here. And at the moment, just for context, there are over 10,000 cryptocurrencies. So that, I think, gives you a sense of how big the world is. And that's before we get into NFTs, which I don't think we need to dwell on too much, except to say that these conversations have tended to go hand in hand in recent years. And we're talking about this and we'll be examining it in more detail later, partly because while on the one hand, here in the country, you have a push to say, let's adopt it as legal tender, which would mean that we would be able to use it in the same way that we do whatever money is in our bank accounts or e-wallets, as well as whatever money is in our literal wallets. In the European Union, last week, their securities, banking and insurance watchdogs actually said that consumers risk losing money invested in crypto assets and are warning that they could fall prey to scams.
Yes, and some of that has to do with what you said, the fact that we now have about 10,000 over cryptocurrencies and more emerging as we speak, all in an environment of relatively little regulation or oversight, right? Transparency of transactions is one thing, but how this system works, who is regulating them is part of their concern. And they are worried about people losing their investments, essentially, because one of the risks that get pointed out is that these are high-risk investments because of that volatility that you pointed out. Other criticism that has come the way of cryptocurrencies is ethics in terms of allowing massive accumulation of wealth without, again, a lot of oversight. And one that keeps getting brought up, the environmental costs of engaging in these transactions, because a huge amount of energy is needed to mine cryptocurrency and to store the servers. And therefore, this makes it an environmental hazard. in some ways equivalent to our current electricity bill that comes from fossil fuels. So a lot of things to unpack. Obviously, a lot of reasons that people are pushing for it, but concerns that are repeatedly being voiced out as well.
So we'd like to hear from you. Would you like to see cryptocurrencies used as legal tender here? Do you think this is something that we're ready for? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, this is going to be the focus of the first part of our show, this question of how we could use it here as is being put forth by the ministry. Joining us for that after this will be Harpreet Singh, CEO and co-founder of Blocklime. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:15 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. Today we're talking about cryptocurrencies, specifically because the Ministry of Communications and Multimedia has proposed that it be adopted as legal tender in our country, which is also our question to you. We'd like to know, is this something you'd like to see? Do you think we're ready for it? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now to explore this idea is Harpreet Singh, CEO and co-founder of Blocklime, which is a blockchain tech development company. Harpreet, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hi, everybody. Thank you for having me here.
So on that note about cryptocurrencies being adopted as legal tender here in Malaysia, is this something you'd like to see happen?
Of course, actually, we are quite excited about it. Looking into a proposal, there's a bit of doubts, of course, in the ecosystem, like how it actually will be implemented. And who will be responsible for it? Because it comes in from the communication minister, right? Not from the Ministry of Finance, right? So that was actually a surprise to us. But overall, we see a lot of positive outcomes from it. And we would like to actually see this proposal go through.
Tell us how it would work, essentially. How would the average person be able to use cryptocurrency to pay for things?
It totally depends on how it will be implemented, right? So there's the optimist view of or the optimist approach to implementing it, right? Where you actually can just work out with the current e-wallet ecosystem, with the current payment gateways, and just tell them, hey, now you can actually accept cryptocurrencies as a form of payment. And you actually can most likely go onto any terminals that's already available into, in the markets and just pay. For example, the price of the good is like 2 ringgit. You can just pay with the equivalent amount in cryptocurrencies. Let's say it's like X token with like 200 X tokens, for example, right? For that 2 ringgit at the current market rate. And there can be a market at the back which allow you to exchange those and just do the settlement. And it'll give the merchant itself an option if he would like to accept the X tokens or would he like to actually accept ringgit, right? So if that is the optimistic approach of implementing such payment solution, there's not a lot of hassle. Everything is digitally controlled. Everything is well managed. And a government can go with more of a public-private partnership to go up and execute this, right? It's something that we can quickly deploy as well. But if we go with the crypto maximalist approach, like how El Salvador did, because they didn't have a very mature e-wallet ecosystem and not a very mature payment ecosystem out there available. So a lot of the ecosystems that they developed, a lot of the payment softwares that they developed are all new, right? And they've completely followed how the crypto ecosystem won it, using the crypto maximalist kind of viewpoint, where they decided everybody have to price things in Bitcoin and they have to like consistently change it. And things become a bit more difficult for a lot of the merchants, right, to actually manage a volatile asset as a payment.
I wanted to ask you, though, in your earlier example with the terminals and so on, and, being able to pay for something with X amount of tokens, as a user, right, how much monitoring will I need to do about the market rate before, for example, I head out to a physical market and purchase items?
Usually, actually, this is already happening these days. They actually allow crypto wallets. They do this. Like there's Binance Wallet, there's NexoCard, where you actually already have an app on your phone and you can just take this card, which is already integrated with Visa or MasterCard. And then you can just go up and swipe on the terminal and it'll just give you this info that, hey, we're actually exchanging this particular amount of X token for how much of ringgit, for example, right? So it'll give you the rate immediately there. And all these rates are usually quite not very far apart from the current price rate. Usually the percentage difference is less than 1%, right? Depending on the card and depending on the person who issue it and the exchange at the back, usually it's less than 1% difference. So a lot of this, you can neglect it, the whole exchange rate at the back, actually.
Now, what would need to happen for cryptocurrency to be used as legal tender from a technology, policy and security standpoint?
So I think using it as a legal tender at this particular time, government have to really look into this whole concept, right? Why are they actually really accepting it as a legal tender, right? It was just out of the blue, suddenly said, hey, let's accept this as a legal tender, but why are we doing it, right? That has not yet been addressed. I think government is still looking into a very short-sighted viewpoint of, you know, like just thinking of the payments that that will, might help the industry. I think the whole push that the industry is asking for is overall, you know, like looking into the whole digital asset, the crypto industry, and how can they actually facilitate development of the industry, right? To answer your question, I think there has to be a proper KYC, AML checks in place. There should be proper sort of compliance companies to be available in Malaysia for them to actually facilitate a lot of these crypto payments. And the whole infra, you know, like the whole ecosystem has to grow together with it, right? So previously, Malaysia had a very hard-on no, that there's not going to be any payments activities in Malaysia regarding crypto. So none of the companies or startups or anybody even thought of opening up a company in Malaysia around this space. And now suddenly when the proposal comes in, the whole ecosystem is not ready for payments. Although we can see there are DeFi companies, there's NFT ecosystem in Malaysia. There's a whole booming different toolkits and everything that are being developed in Malaysia for the blockchain ecosystem. But the payment infra ecosystem is not yet well developed. So a lot of those infras have to come in. A lot of those policies has to be developed. A lot of amendments will be have to be made, especially under the Central Bank Act, under the Payments Act, under the Money Business Act, under the Bank Negara especially. And most importantly, who is really going to govern this? Because crypto has been a hot potato between government agencies. Like first you used to say, hey, Bank Negara going to govern it. Then the next government say, SC is going to govern it. Then the next government say, no, this is payments, this is Bank Negara. So it has been a hot potato between them. So I think they kind of have to decide who should be governing it, or even think about having a separate entity, which is a digital assets commission, because this whole industry might even boom much bigger, right? It might be as big as our securities industry someday in future, because there's overlap between payments, securities, assets, commodities, and many more, even things that we haven't touched before for hundreds of years, metaverse and all of those are popping up right now. So in this case, this might even be bigger than some of our traditional financial assets and financial instruments. So in this case, it actually might require a whole commission of it, if it's own in future. So they might have to plan it, have a proper roadmap, decide on building the ecosystem, the tools that are missing, and have a proper leadership and governance around it.
So let's talk pros and cons, right? What are the benefits of this compared with existing payment pathways?
So, I mean, if you look into the crypto ecosystem, a lot of people usually just look at Bitcoin and you think that, oh, crypto is slow, or you're like, crypto is like not so eco-friendly, because that's the main and you know, like the founding cryptocurrency that everybody know and the most marketed cryptocurrency out there. But if you actually really go up and start studying all the various different types of cryptocurrencies today can do much faster transactions, where Visa can do about 41,000. Most cryptocurrencies nowadays can hit about 200 to 300,000 transactions per second. So they can do very fast transaction settlements. So the cost per transaction, where Visa charges you for a certain percentage, depending on cards and regions, it can go anywhere from 2% to even up to 10% on different cards and different integrations. Crypto transactions are really cheap. It can be 0.00001 cent. So it means it's like really cheap to actually go up and do transactions on it. So when you think about that, you can start thinking about microtransactions. So on everyday life, you don't really consider that, but just imagine like in streaming platforms or radio platforms like you, right? What about if you wanted to actually allow people to subscribe to your radios, instead of asking them to come in and, you know, like subscribe to BFM and pay a monthly $20 fee, but what if you actually can just pay as you consume, right? You heard 20 minutes of BFM, maybe you just pay for the 20 minutes, right? And you can microcharge them because the fee is so small, it's negligible, right? So in this case, you can do microtransaction use cases. Imagine how many video and streaming services that you're subscribing to. You might be on, you know, like Netflix, you might be on, you know, like many different sort of, you know, like streaming platforms, but how many of them you really watch, right? You might be, you know, like sitting down on tons of subscriptions right now, but you might be only utilizing 1 or 2 hours of each of its content. What if you actually can build pay-as-you-use, pay-as-you-stream kind of concepts? This is what microtransactions of crypto can enable. Then in terms of security, it allows fast, you know, like it's much more secure. That's, a, you know, like and much faster. And it can do settlements much, you know, like it can do some instant settlements in many cases. So in this case, you do not have like, you know, like require like huge settlement backlogs and huge manpower to actually do settlement, which reduce the cost of financing. Then even contract managed payments, you know, like there's whole concept of smart contracts in the blockchain and ecosystem right now, where you can digitize contracts and you can allow them to manage your finances. You can allow them to manage certain money in them. So in this case, let's say you are doing a service where you're supposed to be paid, right? You can actually lock it in the contract. And then basically once the service has been delivered, the contract can release it, right? So in this case, it can happen digitally. You don't need a lawyer. You don't need anybody else to come in and, you know, like preview it. Only if there's a dispute, then you can take it to a court, right? So a lot of new financial assets, a lot of new innovation, a lot of new technologies, a lot of new payment models, a lot of new, concepts will emerge by actually adopting cryptocurrencies in large, right? And a lot of new innovations and startups will start forming up in the country as well to support this whole infra.
And if we look at the other side of it, what are the main arguments against adopting cryptocurrency as legal tender?
I mean, if you look at on the opposite side, there has been a very repetitive, discussions around, the whole arguments around cryptocurrencies, right? They've been quite repetitive over time. It's like, oh, there's a lot of money laundering issues, there's terrorism financing issues. But if you go up and see any kind of document out there, which actually talks about what kind of, and most reports from the financial regulators, you will actually see cryptocurrency is a very small segment of ML and terrorism financing, right? Because it is transparent. It's very hard to still move money in it, especially big money in it. That's why a lot of people still prefer using shadow banking and, loopholes in banking ecosystem, because they can still move billions in them. In cryptocurrency, if you move billions, everybody knows, because everybody can just open up an explorer and just find it. If you move billions in Bitcoin, everybody in the world will know somebody just moved billions in Bitcoins, because everybody is tracking it and everybody can see it on an explorer. Even the biggest movement in the market is easily is being tracked by most analytics softwares. And even, let's say, if you're moving a money launderer is moving money, or any kind of terrorism financing is happening in the space, and you know those wallets, you can easily track where the money went through and where it was liquidated. Only issue today is understanding, I will say. A lot of the analysts, financial analysts, and a lot of our regulators and FIUs, financial investigator units, do not have the understanding of the space. They do not have enough knowledge on how to govern the space. They do not have the tools to actually fight back money laundering and terrorism financing in the space. So they are worried. So they are trying to delay the discussion as long as they can. And, delay the adoption as long as they can, because tomorrow when this adoption happens and everybody's able to use it and there's a huge volume of transaction happenings, and how will they monitor it, right? So that's why, there is solutions to the arguments that has been presented, and the solutions are quite obvious. But only thing is, we do not have the right political will to implement the solutions, which is to digitize a lot of these processes, to have tools developed in our regulators and FIUs to actually track the systems. And another way is actually to even, if you really look into a lot of our FIUs today, the financial investigator units, they are very, very manual. They still ask you to send in a report from all the banks all across. They still go through them. They still have analysts who actually look into and start finding for information and parts. So a lot of it is not crime prevention, right? It's basically just trying to crime reaction in a way, where basically the crime has already happened and what is the reaction to it, right? So in this case, crypto will not only allow you crime prevention, because all the ecosystem is, you can actually track payments in, real time. There's no report that you have to send in the, after the end of the month. It is happening now, lifetime reporting, and you can do crime prevention if you really know how to deal with crypto. So that will be my counter argument to it.
Harpreet, unfortunately, we are out of time. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That was Harpreet Singh, CEO and co-founder of Blocklime, which is a blockchain tech development company, talking about the suggestion for cryptocurrencies to be adopted as legal tender. We'd like to hear from you. Is that something that you're looking forward to? Is it something you want to see? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:38 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We're talking today about cryptocurrency, particularly because the Ministry of Communications and Multimedia has proposed for it to be adopted as legal tender. We've been asking you for your thoughts. We are, after this, going to be discussing the warnings that were issued by the EU and their watchdogs, basically about the risks associated with crypto assets. But in the meantime, before we get there, your messages.
Lots of messages, I must say. Let's see. We have Chongkiat saying, if cryptocurrency were to be allowed, it should be in ringgit denomination. Crypto in any other form will mean our country's fiscal policies are not under our control and highly subject to others' manipulation. Current cryptocurrency value is volatile and most are due to speculation activities.
That point about manipulation is coming through a lot, the concerns surrounding that. We do also have this from Sarah, though, who says, am I able to survive and die on this earth without needing to know or handle crypto?
I think it might depend on how long you're talking about. I do think that at this point, no one is talking about crypto as a replacement of our current legal tenders, right? So I suspect it's going to be possible to continue using fiat systems for a while. As to whether, as to the knock-on effects of adopting it as legal tender, though, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and also I suppose it depends on how heavily you want to get involved in the investment side of things and whether you eventually think of that as something that is beneficial to you. In general, though, even as we've seen newer technologies come into play, there has always been the option to still use regular currency. We haven't seen that go away. We also have Munif, who says, it seems like crypto is flawless and the only alleged issue with it is the public's understanding of it, apparently. Well, here's my take. When something is complicated, especially involving finances, it's usually complicated by design. I don't get why you have to be a rocket scientist to barely feel safe about its inner workings. This bubble will burst, mark my words.
You know, Munif, I get what you mean. For me, a lot of my hesitance with this is that complicated by design aspect. I feel like when something involves your money and involves you using your money, you should understand what you're doing. And when something feels so complex, that whole explain it to me like I'm a five-year-old thing, I think should be a part of it. And perhaps if we are moving towards it becoming legal tender, then the experts need to work harder to make this system easy to understand.
I actually think this is part of a larger issue that our guest Harpreet raised earlier, which is the lack of maturity in the ecosystem itself, because hand in hand with that maturity would come this level of education, right, that we're talking about, this notion that, look, for us to feel comfortable, we need to know certain things, and those things should be readily available and not something that does, I mean, to many people, myself included, feel rather opaque. So let us know what you think. Would you like to see cryptocurrency adopted as legal tender in our country? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8888 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:43. You're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. And today we're talking about cryptocurrency, specifically whether it should be adopted as legal tender in Malaysia. And now we want to talk about one important aspect of it, right? The volatility of it all. And joining us for that is Antonio Fatas, Professor of Economics at INSEAD. Professor, thanks for joining us. So the EU's securities, banking and insurance watchdogs have recently issued a warning about the volatility of crypto assets. Can you tell us what's behind this and what the concerns are here?
I mean, I think the concerns are the obvious one. Cryptocurrencies has become bigger. They become bigger just as cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and many others, but also there's other assets which are being created, which are being associated to the same world of cryptocurrencies. As they reach more people, regulators are very worried about the volatility, the value of these currencies, the fact that some investors might not understand this volatility. And at some point, they might create losses that people find surprising. And again, that's what regulation is about, to protect consumers, to protect the financial system for a lot of risk. And what they're doing is stepping up now and saying, look, if the market continues growing, given the volatility, we need to regulate this a lot more carefully than we've done so far.
So overall, we've seen cryptocurrencies fluctuate very dramatically in recent years and even months. What are the key factors that fuel this volatility?
Look, we have an asset, which is a cryptocurrency that has no fundamental value. So this is not like a share or a bond that has some fundamental value associated to dividends or to payments of returns. This is an asset that has no fundamental value. So no one can tell you what the true value of Bitcoin is. No one can. So the true value of Bitcoin is whatever the market determines at any point in time. So this is going to be, by definition, a very volatile asset because it's not attached to any fundamental. is attached to the notion that maybe one day we will all be using these cryptocurrencies, but it's a big maybe. It's not clear that we will be there. And even if we're there, it's not clear what the price of the currencies will be at that point, which means it's all left to demand and supply and perceptions of value that are going to change dramatically with news about the currency, news about regulation, or news about anything else that is happening in the world. So what we're seeing today, we're seeing now for years, I expect to see the same for many years to come.
And, you know, overall, interest in digital currencies has been growing rapidly. What is driving this and how does it affect its performance and stability?
I mean, we have to understand that we've been using digital money for many, many years or decades. When I go to a store, I show up with my contactless card, debit card or credit card, or I use my smartphone and I pay for things. Everything is digital. Now, why is it that there's more interest in digital today? Because we live in a more digital world than we did before. So we do more digital purchases, there's more e-commerce, we live in digital ecosystems, social media. So it feels very natural that payments and money are more digital than before, but I don't see it as a revolution. I see it as an evolution. As time passes, mobile payments, digital payments are more common. So I expect that trend to continue, but I would not associate that trend to cryptocurrencies or anything which is that radical. I see most of the digital payments today are done through the regular system, through central bank, through commercial banks. So we're going to see more of that for sure, more innovation in that respect. But that doesn't mean that we're going to see a revolution in money. We're just going to see an evolution towards a more digital world.
So if we were to hone in then on the interest in cryptocurrencies in particular, what are the factors that are driving this growth and how does it affect the value?
Yeah, I mean, the growing interest in cryptocurrencies, originally when the first cryptocurrency was created, Bitcoin, was a very genuine interest of trying to find an alternative currency, alternative to the conventional currencies. I don't think that holds today. That's not true today. Today, the majority of people who are in this world are looking for opportunities to earn a high return, so to become rich in a short period of time. Again, I don't find that to be of a very high value to society, because this is a zero-sum game. Somebody gets rich at the expense of someone else. But that's what I see today. I see opportunities where people see, if I invest in this token, it's going to go up in value, therefore I'll get a high return. If I invest in that other project, it's going to go up in value, so I get a high return. I wish they talk more about the value itself, not just the fact that you can get rich if the price of the token goes up. And if they did that, I think we would see a lot of these initiatives are a little bit too shallow. And I don't think they're going to work the way people promise they're going to work.
And how do cryptocurrency systems differ from traditional existing bank setups?
So there's two issues. One is purely the technology they use. Now, we can talk a lot about that. We can talk about different technologies, different databases that are being used, different type of security. Now, from my point of view, those are minor differences and not that interesting. I don't think that makes a big difference when you compare cryptocurrencies to regular currencies or regular money. The biggest issue is regular money is anchored by a central bank. So if you ask me what is the value of the US dollar, what is the value of the euro, what is the value of the Singapore dollar, this is anchored by the central bank policies. Central banks have credibility. They have rules which are very clear and people understand. And if you ask me what to expect, I have an answer for you. Cryptocurrencies do not have central banks. They don't have institutions that provide any guidance about the value of these cryptocurrencies. That's the Wild West of currencies. You have zero understanding, no one does, of what the value of these currencies is. So it's a completely different world in that respect, in the sense that there's no anchor. There's no institution that can guarantee what the value of these cryptocurrencies will be.
And one worry, of course, that's been brought up is about the lack of regulatory security and pathways to recompense. Are there existing mechanisms for cryptocurrency and crypto assets, and what needs to be put in place?
We'll need more regulation. We've already done a good amount of it. For example, if today you want to hold an account at a typical standard cryptocurrency exchange, you're going to be subject to certain regulation, which looks a lot like the regulation of a bank. there's all this know your customer regulation, which means the exchange needs to know who you are. You need to make sure that you provide proof of identity. There is some regulations associated to money laundering, anti-terrorism funds, et cetera, which are going to be the same whether you are in the crypto world or in the regular banks. What we haven't done yet is maybe impose even more regulations on these exchanges or other forms of cryptocurrency assets, the way we do with other assets in the normal economy, the conventional currencies. But I think we'll get there as these things get bigger. There's going to be an increasing demand to be regulated the same way they're regulated in the normal world, not the cryptocurrency, but in the conventional currency world.
So do you see cryptocurrency reaching the same relative stability of fiat currencies or gold?
I don't see it with today's world. I don't see it because it has a system, a method of governance, a sort of set of rules on how the supply of cryptocurrencies control, which is not acceptable for today's economy. It just doesn't have the solidity that a central bank has. It doesn't have the judgment. It doesn't have the ability to keep up with economic developments, which means it's going to be very, very volatile regardless of how many people use it. So I just don't see it functioning the way we see currencies, normal currencies function, because it has a very different governance system and it has a very different monetary policy rule.
If I could extend that question, though, what would need to happen for us to see that kind of stability?
I just don't think the current design will ever work. I just don't see it. Again, to give you an example, if you go to a country, I'm going to go to China for a second, every time there is a big holiday, like Chinese New Year, you have a big increase in demand for currency. So people demand more currency. Now, what does the Central Bank of China do? They change the supply of currency to match that demand so people can satisfy that demand. That way, they provide stability to the currency. So that's something that you do regularly in a way that most people don't see, but this is happening sort of behind the stage. Now, Bitcoin, any other cryptocurrency that I can think of, does not have the ability to do that. It's impossible. So if Bitcoin were to be adopted, every time there is a spike in demand, we would see some massive volatility because there's no central bank to control the supply. So the only way to make this work, I would have to make the cryptocurrencies look like regular currencies. But then we're going to the current world. We got into the same world in which we live with regular currencies, institutions like central banks, having that flexibility. So there's a little bit of a contradiction. Bitcoin was created as a contrast to central banks, but there's some things in central banks that work really well. So either the whole cryptocurrency world changes back to a more conventional system, or I don't see them working ever in the way that they can provide the stability that we need.
So on that note, 6 months ago, El Salvador became the first country to recognize Bitcoin as legal tender. And, you know, since then, its volatility led to issues with daily transactions. The IMF has actually asked them to reconsider their approach. What learnings can we take from this?
I'd be very pessimistic that it doesn't work. If you look at El Salvador, Bitcoin is not used that often. In fact, if you look at retailers in the last months who have been seeing any payment in Bitcoin, is a really small minority. And it doesn't get used because the currency is not ready. There's no way to use a cryptocurrency given its current volatility as a regular form of payment. So even if the government says this is now possible, it doesn't mean that it's going to happen. So the conditions are not there. You cannot have a volatile currency acting as money. And what El Salvador has taught us is that it doesn't matter what the government says, if the economic principles are not right, people are not going to use cryptocurrencies.
And meanwhile, countries like Egypt, Qatar, and China have outright banned cryptocurrencies. Is this warranted?
I mean, I think what is warranted is that you want to protect people from this volatility. And you can maybe either put regulation in place. I think that would be better. Or you can do something more radical, which is sort of forbid some of these activities within your country. But that's sort of an extreme form of regulation. I'm not sure we need to go all the way there. But certainly, I feel very comfortable and I feel that is a good idea to put regulation in place to limit the volatility of these activities.
And many of the other concerns surrounding crypto actually circle environmental and ethical concerns. Could you help us run through some of these issues?
I mean, to me, the biggest issue with cryptocurrencies has always been the volatility of the price. That's the biggest one. The second one, which is maybe debatable because people see it in very different ways, is the technology that these cryptocurrencies use, which we typically call it the blockchain. It is not ready to handle the volume of transactions that a modern economy needs. Now, there is always the promise that there's going to be a new version of the blockchain, which is going to work. But that promise has been around now for years, and it still doesn't work. And I think there's some fundamental inconsistencies between a world that is decentralized, where you don't have a centralized institution like a central bank, and the idea of a technology that works, that is scalable, fast, and that can handle a large volume of transactions. So that's, to me, the second biggest issue, which is I don't think the technology is ready to handle the type of payments that we see in the real world today.
How would you like to see these addressed then?
I'm very pessimistic here. I just don't think cryptocurrencies are the future. I want the conventional currencies, the currencies that we've been using for decades or centuries in some cases, to keep becoming modern forms of payment, to keep becoming more and more digital, to have a well-functioning payment system, which requires the efforts of both the central bank and the banks themselves, to have a very competitive system where we don't have people charging high fees for cross-border payments. I want to see that improved, but I don't think that requires, in fact, it's not going to work in a world where we use cryptocurrencies. What we need is very, very strong investments in modern payment systems, a strong leadership from central banks, coordination across central banks in the world. That's going to deliver improvements to the life standards of all of us in a way that cryptocurrencies will not.
And what other developments are you expecting to see in this space in the next 6 months?
I think we'll continue seeing developments in cryptocurrencies. They keep reinventing a little bit their models. They keep going to different markets. They keep developing sort of new faces to the rest of the world. Because some of this world is one that needs to keep moving, because people get tired of one label and they need another one to get excited. Now, I don't find this very productive for all of us. This is just people moving labels and calling things differently, but at the end, the fundamentals have not changed. So I'm still a lot more excited about developments in the conventional currency world. That I'm very excited. Things have moved very fast in some countries. They're moving very fast in others. And I'm hoping that that leads to a coordination across countries so we can have cross-border payments, which is the area where probably today we see more frictions, that getting improved faster, cheaper, seamless cross-border payments. That's what I'm looking for. That's not going to be delivered by cryptocurrencies. It will be delivered by conventional currency.
Prof, thanks for speaking with us today. That was Antonio Fatas, Professor of Economics at INSEAD, talking to us about the volatility and risks associated with cryptocurrency, just as a counterpoint, right, to what we opened with, which was how it could potentially benefit the country if it's used as legal tender, which is the question we've been asking you and getting lots of messages on. We'll come back for them later. But would you like to see cryptocurrency used as legal tender in Malaysia? Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. This has been Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.